You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Travis Knapp. Travis, it's good to have you here this morning.
It's good to be here.
So the way we start the show is with this huge question, but it's a kickoff question. Who are you? You know, what do we need to know to start our conversation? Because what we do here is we model getting to know one another on the air.
Right on.
So, okay.
Well, I'm Travis. That's my name my mom gave me.
And,
Lately, I'm a musician a lot of the time. Piano player and a singer and banjo player and all these things. I'm a permaculturist at heart, a grower of food and harvester of wild medicines and food.
Okay.
That sums up.
And the permaculture piece is basically how to use the environment without continuously disrupting it, disturbing it to produce food or medicines or whatever.
It's sustainability, but it's a step further. It's regenerative agriculture, not just agriculture, but how we provide for our human needs the planet.
And you can help me to understand it better in the course of the hour, I'm sure, as we talk about things in your life. Now, you didn't just bring music today; you brought your banjo.
That's right.
And you're gonna share with us some of your music. Now, do you want to introduce your first piece?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I'm at the moment this winter recording my third album of original music, and so this is a song from that. Because I can't get these songs out of my head, so I thought I'd come and share them.
Good. And we're gonna try to make sure we've got everything adjusted so we can get it right.
Okay.
Great. Very good. Go ahead.
There's sunshine on the hillside, and there are shadows down below. Morning light is rising, and the rooster starts to crow. Many seeds to sow. Well, I'm grown up, Mama, doing right by living hard like you taught me to do. I've got no regrets, only unpaid debts for all the kindness from people like you. Well, there's so much time still for dreaming, and there's nothing left here to do for today. As we breathe in this life we are weaving, the evening light fades away. Well, I'm grown up, Mama, doing right by you, living hard like you taught me to do. I've got no regrets, only unpaid debts for all the kindness from people like you. Well, I'm grown up, Mama, doing right by you, living hard like you taught me to do. I've got no regrets, only unpaid debts for all the kindness from people like you.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and that was Travis Knapp. And what a line. No regrets, only unpaid debts for all the kindness from people like you.
That's it.
And that is a great line. That is a great line. And what inspired you to write that song?
Mm.
Where did that song come from?
It's called Mama, it's from my mother. I wrote the song in a backwards way from how I usually do it. I just had this banjo riff for a long time.
Sure.
Kept playing that over and over, and I didn't really know what it was going to be. And then one day... It found a home, and I was like, oh, Mom, I got some things to say. Yeah, so...
That's a really, really sweet song, and you said that your mom was the one who named you. Not your dad.
I don't know if that's true.
Yeah.
I got to talk to them about that.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get it. So tell me, this is one of the few times that we've had live music on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing it right in the talk studio, so it's a little different for me.
Right.
So I feel as I'm sitting here at a mixing board, as it were, not much to mix, but just trying to keep things from going spinning out of control.
Yeah, I'm grateful for you giving it a shot.
It's good. And if we planned ahead, we have a live studio across the way, but I need a little extra help when doing that. So tell me, you have just opened this whole place up in terms of bringing your heart and your soul and your music here. Mm-hmm. Tell me, what has helped to make, what are some of the formative experiences that have helped to shape who you are?
Mm.
What has helped to shape the person that you have become or are becoming?
I guess I'll start at a random place. I like to think chronologically.
Sure, go ahead. I mean, and most people hear stories better chronologically, so that's fine.
Well, no, so I'm not going to be chronological.
Oh, you're not? Okay,
so sorry, everyone.
That's the warning.
Hears better that way. when was this? About 5 years ago, I sold my car and I got a bicycle.
Uh-huh.
And I started bicycle touring, and I just, kind of dropped everything.
Was that here in Ithaca, or were you
this
here
is where I left
okay.
from, yeah.
Okay, okay.
I started here. I was living on West Hill. So I got this touring bike, and I was just hit the road. I had one destination, which was the Common Ground Fair up in Maine.
Mm-hmm.
It's an agricultural fair, happens every fall. And I can't even remember why I had that inspiration. The there was a friend of mine from Ithaca who was like, hey, I just biked to Detroit. I'm like, what? You can do that? Like, that was wild to me.
Yeah.
So I got this bike, and I didn't train at all, and got on the road, head northeast more or less, and kind of hurt myself a little bit, but did okay, and would just put myself out there and find a spot to camp every night, and just linked up with people, and so this kind of opened up the world to me a bit. I mean, I got to see the kindness of people very firsthand, because for some reason, when you're a bicyclist, people want to help you in a different way.
So you're a solo bicyclist,
So, and then just being outside and moving my body all day. Like, oh, this is all right. I mean, I'd been moving my body, growing food, farming and stuff, but the cardiovascular work of bicycling,
right,
was just like
a long, steady workout every
so
day.
So uplifting, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'd say that, and I've done two or three or four bike tours since, and brought my banjo with me and made it a little more musical traveling. And I just feel so good about my life when I'm riding, and it also makes it nice to come home.
Right. And you're a little bit of the minstrel.
That's right.
especially traveling with your banjo. And so you had never traveled in that way prior to 5 years ago.
Right. I had, the longest I had biked was 20 or 25 miles
right.
on a mountain bike. And I'd done that once or twice.
So what in your head or in your heart shifted coming back from, you know, what how did that trip change your life?
Coming back. Yeah. I remember being a lot more patient actually.
Uh-huh.
That, when I got home, I was just, not in as much of a hurry. I mean, the time scale of riding a bike to get somewhere that would take you an hour or two to drive takes you a whole day to bike there.
Right.
And it just slows down your whole perception of, it's not just at the level of getting place to place. I found it gave me patience just on the, hey, I'm 5 minutes late. It's not a big deal.
Right.
That was nice.
Right. No, that's, and the internal judge, which is like the internal clock, gets to run in a different way.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And then the other, I mean, like I mentioned, to just have this opportunity for people to reach out and help you, and to just have a kind of blank slate of interaction with strangers and with people, maybe friends of friends. And that was just really nice, because that, like the line in the song I just sang, the kindness from people like you, like everyone. I have a teacher that says everyone just wants to be treated with kindness, and that would go a long way in our world. And but the other end of that is to receive kindness, to be able to treat others with kindness. You have to be able to receive it openly, and so that would help me.
Right, and I'm gonna another hat that I wear is that of pastor, Christian pastor.
Oh.
Even in the Hebrew word that's often translated as loving kindness is chesed. Which is another word for what is described as covenant loyalty, and in a relationship of loving kindness, we do for others what they cannot do for themselves, but need in order to thrive, and we ask from others what we cannot do for ourselves, but need in order to thrive, so that nobody does for another what they can do, the other can do, but we fill in the gaps, and therefore we become whole.
That's nice.
Or as whole as we can,
yeah.
And when you go out on a trip like the one you took, I can see people misunderstanding it, both bikers and people along the way, as kind of a leaning into the goodness of others in a way that might be perceived by some as irresponsible. But in a world where you live by that covenant, it's the only responsible thing to do, is to just recognize that every day we're leaning in to the kindness of others.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah. I wonder what you mean by irresponsible. That word caught me.
Well, because I grew up in kind of a self-sufficiency culture where you wanted to take everything with you.
Right.
You know what I mean? So like you wouldn't want to be caught out camping without all the equipment and stuff that you needed. And if you were hunting for your own food or fishing for your own, you know, for meat or whatever, you would know where to find what you needed. And it was kind of irresponsible if you didn't, rather than saying that I am casting my lot with my people.
I see.
You know, and if I'm casting my lot with my people, I will live the life that's possible, as opposed to the life that I would predict or control.
Yeah, I think that's the edge that I was on, because I also have that same leaning of I need to be a totally self-sufficient.
Yeah,
and that's inspired a lot of what I've done in my life. Like, oh, I need to be able to grow my own food. I need to be able to provide shelter for myself and this sort of thing. And being on the bike, actually, it's both of those things enhanced. It's like, oh, I really have to be able to get myself place to place.
And one of the things that we often don't think about is that in order to give to others or ourselves, we also have to learn how to receive, which is what you were saying. And as a pastor, I used to have a rule that I wouldn't ask anyone to take leadership in a service role in a congregation where they were helping other people, mm-hmm. unless they had asked for help themselves in a way that they absolutely had to have it, mm-hmm. because that teaches a humility,
yeah.
that you will never be arrogant in your and privileged in your way of helping others, but yeah. you'll just be with them if you've really learned that. And it's a powerful
yeah.
lesson.
That's huge.
It's a powerful lesson. And I feel that both in the way you speak of and the song that found a home with your mother, mm-hmm. the reference to your mother, and with reference to the being on the kindness of others, yeah. the gratitude. That's just, that is huge.
You can't, like I put it in terms of debt, like sure. you can't repay that debt. People right. will be kind to you. It's, some people call it pay it forward, you right. know, just spread that kindness outward. And
you probably, I'm making an assumption, but I'm assuming that you don't understand, that you probably don't know that the term in the Lord's Prayer with for Christians, which is mm-hmm. forgive us our, often translates as forgive us our trespasses as we forgive the trespasses of others, forgive us our sins as we forgive. The actual mm-hmm. word is forgive us our debts as we forgive, you know.
Not sins.
Not sins. Because the rhetoric of sin was a debt that you could not repay. You can't undo yeah. the past.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You can't, but you right. can move on from it through forgiveness.
Uh-huh.
Not necessarily forgetting, but just, but not holding it against the other.
Right. Or yourself.
Or yourself. Yeah. 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 So I never know what I'm going to walk into with this show.
Yeah. Debt is much more of a neutral term. Sin, I think, has a lot of a specific connotation to it.
Right, right. And sin has an assumption of malevolence, whereas yeah. was debt is just shit happens.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And we don't always able to undo what we don't know quite how we got into.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So it's powerful. Anyway, so Wow. Now, do you want to go to music, or do you want to talk about? Did you grow up in the Ithaca area? Have you moved here? I do these shows totally cold, and I can. So I didn't meet you until you walked into That's the studio right. this morning.
Uh-huh.
So how did you find your way to Ithaca?
Well, I was born in Syracuse uh-huh. and lived in Cazenovia for first 4 or 5 years of my life, and then I lived in Clinton, New York, up near Utica.
Uh-huh.
All through high school,
uh-huh.
and I came here for college. I went to music school at Ithaca College,
uh-huh.
and stayed ever since. My aunt Barb lives here, and she I think was the reason I liked Ithaca. I'm like, oh, I think I'd enjoy that town.
Uh-huh.
And I remember classmates of mine at IC, we would be standing up on the hill, like, all right, well, make sure, like, I lived here for a year. I lived downtown in the Commons, right above where Simeon's was, and we said, oh, next year, this time, we won't be here, right? We're going to go out and do things,
right.
important things. And I just realized, yeah, I love it here. I can do good, important, satisfying things right in this town. Yeah,
right.
So I've been in Ithaca since 2003, and I graduated in 07, so kind of been in the community since then.
Wow. And so you have found a home here.
Mm, totally.
And how did you migrate... how did you migrate into the permaculture where you came to study music,
uh-huh.
but you also discovered the land in a sense?
That's right. Yeah. After music school, I needed a break from music uh-huh. basically. And I was doing a couple of days a week, as a piano accompanist, accompanying singers at the music school, and a couple of days a week, working landscape gardening and a little bit, volunteering at the free health clinic. And, just started swinging in the way of, oh man, I like having my hands in the dirt, and
mm-hmm.
Took over someone's vegetable garden as just kind of an experiment. My first summer out of school, and I'm I like this pretty well. And someone said the word permaculture to me and started explaining it. I'm like, hey, this is a lot of things that I care about all under one umbrella. So I took a course, an immersion, I think it was a 3-week course up at the Finger Lakes Permaculture Institute, was then at the Cayuga Nature Center.
Right.
And so then I was like, yeah, I'm sold. This is, this brings a lot together, and it made me want to get deeper into plants specifically. I mean, there's more to permaculture than plants, but that was my connection point.
And just briefly, what is permaculture?
Permaculture is the design of human inhabitation on this world in a way that works with the forces of nature.
Mm-hmm.
Works with rather than against. That's a component of it, and it's a design system that's informed by the ethics of people care, you care mm-hmm. for the people, or mm-hmm. earth care for the earth, and fair share, which is distribution of the abundances.
Right. And when I first heard the term, I heard of it in association with a lot of Woodland's work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought of it as more of a term of how do you move into an ecosystem without disturbing it too much while you're still harvesting of its abundance. But what your mm-hmm. definition of it actually is more robust in the mm-hmm. sense that you can take any environment and begin to think about what are the human environment interactions and how can they be sustained yeah. and serve other critters as well as plants
yeah.
in that system.
For without, sure.
Yeah.
And the fact that Woodlands came to mind is important because, you know, here in the whole eastern Woodlands, this was all forest. That's what all most of the land would progress to, mature forest, if left, untouched by humans. So that the woodland ecosystem is very important, mm-hmm. but there's mm-hmm. also lake ecosystem, sure. wetland ecosystem, these things. So yeah, just like you said, it's working with what's going on in those places.
And the important thing for me to hold up to kind of urban skeptics
mm-hmm.
is that there's another way to extract abundance mm-hmm. in a way that doesn't destroy, but it doesn't. It also means that we can still participate in a modern economy that has commodities, mm-hmm. but we do it in a way that has more has a firmer foundation underneath it. Perhaps.
Yeah. And like a simpler way of like, perennial crops are, mm-hmm. are favored often in mm-hmm. permaculture. You have a more permanent agriculture, and so instead of growing corn and soybeans, we grow chestnuts and hazelnuts,
right.
These perennial tree crops that give us the same nutrients, but they, instead of a monocrop, monoculture that, you know, the soil washes away really easily, there's mm-hmm. not a lot of life there. When you start having perennials and trees, you have a more vibrant ecosystem. And so, yeah, I think the permaculture leaning is towards more vitality mm-hmm. and more flexibility to change, resiliency,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a huge word. So what would you like to do next musically? You want to play one of your pieces or
yeah,
or?
I'll play one of mine.
Sure, okay.
Yeah. I'll have to tune for a moment. Let's see. Actually, maybe I'll play this one. I'll test your microphone balancing here.
Yes.
I picked up this kalimba. It's a thumb piano is another name for it. Mbira mm-hmm. at a vintage shop over next to the State Theater. And this was just a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
I happened to be sitting there and I'm like, hey, that looks fun. And I like picking up new instruments that I can use as a songwriting tool.
Right.
And so this is a song that I wrote when I was on a trip down in near Asheville, North Carolina.
Okay.
Camping in the woods. My friend was turning 30 and he said, I'm going to be in the National Forest for a month and come and hang out.
Come and visit me in the
yeah.
forest.
Yeah.
Cool.
In the wilderness, really, it was just like a trail, 45-minute, like
part of the Blue Ridge.
Near there, yeah. But just a like you couldn't find it unless you knew exactly where you were going. It was
right.
a nice little
right.
hidden camp. So this is the song. It's called Humble. When I'm gone, may they say I was too humble. May they say I gave too much away. May they say I gave thanks too often for this world that taught me how to pray. When we eat,
offer up a blessing for the food and where the food came from. When I lay me down, I am grateful for the day and all the days to come. When I sing, I hope my words are honest to myself and everyone who hears. May we learn to celebrate each other, our family, our family, both far away and
listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour is Travis Knapp. Wow. I grew up in a culture where we sang, we created conversation in song that we made up as we worked.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not singing other people's songs. It's actually making up our own conversation in song. And so honest words is something which you can't, it's really hard to sing with that kind of intention that's emotional and physical and intellectual without having things hit the right notes and the right words and stuff, because you know you're off when you're off. Am I making sense?
Not quite.
Okay. So when you're telling a story when you're talking to another person and you're working along, if you're trying to put it into a melody and also to tell what you want to say to them all at the same time, you have to let go of a certain kind of control. You can't craft it. You can't hedge it. It has to come out of you in a way that has a kind of honesty or integrity that you haven't overly cooked. You know what I mean?
You're talking about making up songs like you were doing. Yeah.
Right, as a kid.
Yeah.
So when you say sing the honest words, you know, those are words that have the right measure of judgment, the right measure of compassion, the right measure of mercy, the right color, the right use, the right, you know, all of those things. And that may you know be known to be too humble or too joyful. Uh-huh. You know, and that's a very powerful, powerful piece that you just sang.
Thank you.
How, I want to know, why would you care? You know, you aren't probably, you're probably just 30 or not quite.
Exactly 30.
why would you care about humility? How did you come to even know that that matters? Because most people don't get it. Most people don't really get it in that kind of way that you just sang about it until much later in life.
That's a great question. what is humility, right?
Yeah.
I've had the pleasure of serving at this retreat center up in Danby, and it's a Zen center, and it's a Sufi whirling dervish center, and in the summer there's these raw food detox healing retreats, and people come for all sorts of reasons. Sometimes just keep their health, just keep it up. Sometimes people come with terminal cancer, and everything in between, maybe lose some weight, maybe totally stressed out, and at, you know, their life out of control like that. And so I was on staff, I was growing vegetables for those retreats, and people would come for 10 to 20 days at a time, and maybe 60 guests and like 15 staff, and holding this space for people to just come eat really good food, really healthy food, and just have a peaceful place and do saunas all day and just like, you know, walk in the woods. And and the directors there would always stress, you know, this is service, to hold the space is service, as staff. And we took that real seriously and still do. It's still going on. And so I think that's been a big way I've learned humility, to come, and it's a little bit about you. You're there as an individual, as an ego and a person. But through the service, you kind of disappear a little bit. You just show up, you do your work, you pick the lettuce, you wash the lettuce, you serve the lettuce, you eat the lettuce. But you just show up with an open heart, and you keep this gentle, kind space. And to see how people respond to that very quickly, with profound healing, it's like, and then over and over again all summer for 4 years, right. I kind of had this, and the staff kind of family, team and family, and also holding space for each other, and anyway, there's just no way to be in that setting for so long without being totally humbled by something beyond yourself, and it's in service of others, and it's in service of kind of a higher good, and a peace, just a peace,
right,
in the heart and peace of mind. I hope that answered the question.
Yeah. And I hear, and I was hearing echoes of the other things that you said too, with your interest in permaculture and soil. I mean, humility is based on the word yumus, and you're part of the soil.
Yeah.
If you are humble, and from that soil comes what's possible, and we don't necessarily know what's possible until it has been grown and harvested and given away and given over to others who may have need of it in ways that we would never have chosen or directed. But in humility, we can allow for a world that has more needs and more pains than we can understand or control, but we can still be present.
That's it.
Yeah. And yours is a powerful, powerful witness in that way. Yeah. No. And the gesture I share with you, that you know, that of my heart to your heart and my spirit to yours.
Thank you.
Yeah. Wow. So when were you, what years were you working at the retreat center? Is that recently? Was that after the bike trip or That's before right. the bike trip?
It was actually just after the bike trip.
Because right, it sounds like the perfect follow-up to the bike trip, frankly, you know, in terms of learning how to slow down because... Yeah. I grew up in a rural culture where the young people all fled and all that were left were the old folks who had been born in the late 1800s. Huh. And I was a young kid and then there were others there, but the ones who were around were these fairly humble people who'd been bypassed by modernity and they knew how to can and they knew how to raise things. And the old men would sit out on the benches and on the streets mm-hmm. in the town. And we lived on a farm and, you know, they would sit with the tips of their fingers and thumbs touching, which is a traditional meditation pose and a way of kind of integrating right and left brain for those who are sensitive to those kinds of issues.
That feels really good. Yeah. If you're listening on the radio, you should try that. You just put your tips of your thumbs, all the tips of all your fingers together.
And they would sit for hours like this. And when you would come into their presence, they would look at you, but they wouldn't, you know how, you know, it's like when you see a cartoon of a person looking at another person, they can have laser eyes or they can have wide eyes, which see you in context. As a child, I felt the quality of being beheld because these were people who not only looked at me, but they looked at the space around me and behind me and the space that I couldn't see that was in front of me and the life that I couldn't see that was in front of me, because so much of life had been in front of them and had already passed, and they knew something about time and its passage. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about slowing down and what you were forced to learn on that bicycle trip, I get a little bit of a sense of that quality. You really have to be fully present to wherever you stop for the night or whoever you run into, because they may have the direction for the next step.
That's right.
You know, or you may have a word for them that they hadn't known that they needed.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, and that can flow easily if you show up present.
Yeah. And it won't show up at all if you're preoccupied, if your heart is somewhere else, or if you're taken over by fear or anxiety in the moment.
Mm-hmm. And it's always a mix. There's always a little fear, a little
There's
anxiety.
Edge. Yeah. The we wouldn't be alive if we didn't know how precious it were to lose that at
That's
times.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So, wow.
So.
What have you... What do you do when you come into a situation where you may have to work with somebody whose values are different than your own? Either, you know, in your musical life or in your work life, how do you pursue what you have so clearly discovered as this integrity of humility and joy when others may not share that? How do you engage?
Well, when you say that other people might not share that, it might be in that moment they don't share that.
Yeah.
And it might be in that moment that I do happen to be more present with humility and joy, but
it may not.
Yeah. And I think I just find it possible to relate to where anyone else is at from a place where I know I was at one point or am at currently. Like it's not too hard if I take a moment and say, oh, okay. I see that you're thinking this way now, or you're feeling this way now. And I get it. I get that we are in flux.
Right. And I guess what I'm let me be more descriptive, because I don't know how to ask the question that I want to ask.
Okay.
And that doesn't happen to me a whole lot, but it does some. Okay. So for example, I'm not rattled too much when somebody may come at me in a rage or in a fuss and be in a fighting mode. Okay. And I can say to myself, do I have it in me to kind of wrestle with this person, or do I need to find a way to deflect so that, but it's no judgment on me whether I choose to wrestle or to deflect.
Yeah.
But it's more of either one can be a good response, and they may not be an expression of humility, because it may take some ego to really get oneself clear about how to deflect the energy of another who's in the attack mode or in confrontation mode, or it may take a lot of energy to really engage in the kind of wrestling match that leads to the resolution of something that you can. So what I'm asking you is, how do you, how have How inside of yourself, how do you deal with yourself when you have to make a choice that may pull you outside of your comfort zone? And how do you look at the other? I'm trying to describe a situation here.
Yeah.
And in there's a question, and I don't quite know what the question is.
Maybe through an example, like set up a scene or something.
Yeah.
Scenario.
Yeah. Yeah. So for example, if I am working with a person getting ready to host a meeting, and somebody comes in having just had a really bad experience and they want to unload that on me,
yeah.
You know, I have to, and the thing is that they're blind to what's going on because there are certain things that I may see about it, but that's really where they are.
Mm-hmm.
I can choose to engage. I can choose to deflect. I can let it go down. Mm-hmm. I can meet it. Those are judgment calls, and there are no right answers.
Right.
So how do you, when you are presented with somebody in your face who mm-hmm. who wants your attention right then, how do you continue to live your life and still make a choice about engaging their life?
I see. Well, my first instinct, the way I've, I guess, been raised is in politeness and, mm-hmm. you know, recognizing people just in that way, like, okay, what's going on? Tell me what you have to say. And then once something crosses a certain line where it's like clear, like, this isn't a good situation, and it's actually not helping either of us, to make that choice. I mean, I guess the ideal, doesn't always happen this way, is I would want to be aware of my breath.
Right.
And that's a good starting point, that, I know.
To be aware of your breath.
My breath, my breathing.
Right.
And just that awareness grounds me and maybe can ground the other person into a moment, just a moment mm-hmm. of reflection and calm. And that might be all that takes to diffuse. And I'm it takes a lot for me to get like worked up, like for me to, mm-hmm. to match someone in what you call like wrestling with them.
Right. To match their intensity without going over it or going under it, but to meet them as an equal.
Right.
Where they've chosen to take you, not where you would have chosen to go.
Right. Yeah. I guess, I mean, I really have to choose to go to that kind of mm-hmm. more aggressive level. I wish I had it in me a little bit more, in fact, but it's just like not in me. So my tendency is to go towards the calming
right.
side.
Right. And that is a perfectly fine strategy. And what you've told me is that's that may be how, as a young person, relatively young person, you have learned the lessons of humility so early.
Some of them, yeah.
Yeah, some of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you make a living? At doing what you do. I mean, because to have that kind of spirituality and that kind of presence in the world, it can be awkward
mm-hmm.
to figure out how to make a living.
I make a living by having low expenses. That's a very important part
yep.
of it.
Yep.
And the way I got to that was
to stay out of debt.
Stay out of debt. Yeah. And I'm real lucky to not have any debt. So, that helps. And, the way I got to not having high expenses was to really assess what are my most vital needs.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I sold my car and got a bike, I'm like, oh, my money is going to this car and to my rent. I need to figure out a way. I know there's ways to, you know, at this time in my life when I don't have a lot of money, to not pay rent and to not, you know, pay for car insurance. And
sure,
all
sure,
this.
Sure, sure.
And, you know, how can I get food through foraging and
right.
growing it? And, so that's kind of the basis of it. And living at a retreat center for 4 years, that makes it very easy.
Room
because
and board was part of your,
yeah,
room was part of your,
I lived there year round,
yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah.
Would be working, and in exchange for a place to live and food to eat. So that,
sure.
that kind of takes a lot of, once you take that stress out of your life, it opens up a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, I have to do this job because I have to pay for this apartment and this car and this food. So that's been a big freedom and just kind of given me that standard to keep in my life. And I guess that started with the bike trip because I think I worked it out to about $10 a day. I was good spend and live happily. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty good.
Right, right.
So, but anyways, the a more conventional answer to your question of how I make my living is this year, since I left the retreat center and first time in 6 years, I'm not growing food. I'm just a musician and I'm getting paid, sometimes not getting paid to play music.
Right. Right.
And I just did a fundraiser for the album I'm recording. Mm-hmm. So that even though I don't have the money to record an album, I have all these fans.
People are supporting you.
Friends and family that are supporting it. So it lets me work on, this is my project. This winter is just making this album.
Right.
So that feels really good. And heating with wood and you know, living good.
And it is a quality of life where your life is the result of your relationships and not the result of anything you've stored up other than relationships.
Mm. Yeah, it's I've stored some food. I've stored firewood and I've and otherwise, yeah, the bank account can go to zero and I still feel wealthy because of I have a support network and I have friends and family and yeah, exactly. It's relationships and it's and also it's, you know, being unafraid of having nothing,
right.
Or even, you know, to take it a step further, not being afraid to oh, I die.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's
the thing that happens.
Right. And yes, it's being able to live with a kind of fearlessness that's not defiant. Mm. It's just simply fearlessness.
That's a nice way to put it.
And as a culture, we do not know how to foster in people the times in their lives when they may need to live for a year or a decade or some time or a few months in the manner that you're living. But being able to do it and being able to walk away from it as a different sort of person allows you to then become productive in conventional ways that make you not tied to the yoke of somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes, and you can still, there are times in our lives when we are phenomenally productive and we put aside resources and we sink them so that we can draw on them or other people can draw on them when they need them. Mm-hmm. And we don't think well about how to make that happen.
Hmm.
I don't want to even try to go down that path anymore, but you're living on this result now for a time. Mm-hmm. And when that time is over, you'll be ready to do something else.
That's right.
You know, and that's fine.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. I've spent a lot of my life living in a way that, for better or worse, to make people less dependent on me and me less dependent on people, which is kind of against what we were talking about earlier.
Sure.
It's like totally depending on everyone and totally... And everyone totally depending on you. So it's all these edges at once.
Right. And you're learning how to navigate them,
right.
How to pull them in and push them out. And then that's right. A beautiful skill. What should we go to musically next?
I would be remiss if I didn't. I have this band. This is my favorite band. I'd
sure.
never have a favorite band before, you know, a couple of years ago. And we need to play something by them.
Sure.
And I feel like I've taken all the time playing my songs, and I'm going to play more. But at least one. This will go for Rising Appalachia. It's two sisters from Atlanta, Georgia, and via New Orleans and Asheville. And they're just they've got some magic going. They've got a 4-piece band now, Rising Appalachia, and this is a song. I think it's just the two sisters singing.
Okay.
A cappella.
Very good.
Way down south, the Mississippi calls my name. Way down south, said the Mississippi calls my name. Way down south, said the mighty Mississippi calls my name. Way down south, said the Mississippi calls my name. Take me back to the place where I first saw the light, to the sweet sunny south. Take me home. Take me back to the place where I first saw the light, to the sweet sunny south. Take me home. sway down south. Georgia and Louisiana, yeah, you're home to me. Said sway down south. Georgia and Louisiana, yeah, you're home to me. Way down, down south in the Mississippi calls my name. Way down, down south in the Mississippi calls my name. Way I be crossing Appalachia waiting for the bridge to take me across Lake Pontchartrain. I'll be crossing Appalachia waiting for the bridge to take me across Lake Pontchartrain. Way, way down, 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 south, the Mississippi calls. Mississippi calls. Way, way down, down, south, south, Mississippi calls. Mississippi calls my name. Say way, way down, 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 south, Mississippi calls. Mississippi calls my name. Way, way down, 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 south, said the Mississippi calls my name.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest is Travis Knapp. So, Travis, the question that we end the show on is, what do you do on a regular basis, daily, weekly, monthly, you know, once a year, whenever, to restore yourself emotionally, intellectually, physically? And how do you need to know when you do that?
how do you need to know to do that? I think the answer that covers the most ground is that inevitably being outside, often being in the woods, doesn't have to be in the woods, being outside, breathing the air outside, it just like resets everything. If I know if I've been spending too much time indoors or even outdoors with the wrong awareness, I guess.
What's the wrong intention?
It's not even intention. It's like a non-presence.
Okay, so you're functionally just doing something and you happen to be outside.
That's right. That's right. Okay. That happens sometimes. Yeah. But for the most part, it's like if I'm outside, that's why I started farming in the first place, growing food, because I'm like, I need to make sure I have to force myself to spend the whole day outside by making it my job, because if I know I feel better when I'm outside. So, So that was a way to work it into my life. And now I'm spending all this time, you know, on recording inside and on the computer and doing editing for the album stuff. And I really need to be intentional about it. I'm just going to go for a 20-minute walk. Uh-huh. And even this morning I woke up and I was disappointed at how cold it was in the room. And I'm like, and there's a mouse chewing on something. And I'm like, I don't want to get up yet. I just want to lie here. I had to get up and I was grumpy. And then I stepped outside and it was the most stunning morning. It was totally still. It was 10 below zero. Mm-hmm. And it was like all these pastels. And I took a breath of the air and was like, everything's fine. Oh, I'm so glad to be alive. And it's just this constant removal from that and coming back to it. So yeah, walking in the woods, being outside. I love winter. I'm really happy at the moment. Mm-hmm. So that's a daily thing. That's a weekly thing. And longer periods of time. Like I've done some walking Finger Lakes Trail and doing long, you know, backpacking and bicycling. Like, so it's working that into as like a yearly or
thing. So you do the big events on a yearly basis. And these are the physical ways in which you kind of reset your senses. How do you take care of yourself emotionally and intellectually?
It's the same.
Okay.
It's really the same. Because when my body is at ease in that way, being outside, it calms my mind and emotions. It
resets.
Intertwined.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And when do you know what happens in your mind or in your heart that makes you know you need to do a reset? You need to go out and do something. What changes? How do you pick up on it?
Usually I feel shorter breathing and frantic mind. These are the like clues that and when I start, you know, when you start having a predominance of more critical and negative thoughts, that's my big cue. Like, wait, what's going on here?
And do you catch that pretty quickly, or like for me, it took me years to begin. I mean, I could know it, but I wouldn't know that this is time for me to do something different.
Oh,
you know what I mean? I would sense my negativity, but I didn't feel like I had the power to address it or change it. So you seem to have learned that fairly.
Yeah.
Fairly, and possibly from being at a retreat center like the one that you were at.
I've had a lot of teachers that just keep reminding these points. And, but yeah, now it's to the point that I notice it and I'm like, it's fine. I'll just, you know, I'll get outside in a couple hours, but then I don't do anything about it.
I see.
You know?
Yeah. So you become a little lazy with it.
A little lazy.
And that's funny because we don't, That's right. We have to be kind to ourselves, both in our aggression and in our laziness.
That's right. That's right.
So you wanted, Travis, it's been wonderful to get to know you. You wanted to close with a song of your own. What, do you want to say anything about that before we close?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. This has been lovely. The hour just flew right by, and I'm grateful for some sweet conversation.
It's been a real pleasure.
This song is called Safe. This was going to be the title song of my album, I Believe We Are Safe, and I've since changed the name of the album to All the Stars You Hold, but this is the like meat behind the album. So I believe we are safe. I believe we are filled with grace. I believe there are no mistakes. I believe we are safe. I believe we are good. I know one day we will all be understood. We got this far 'cause we knew we would. I believe we are good. Words we speak, when you ask, you shall receive. There's power in the joys you seek, when your heart is on your sleeve. Every moment's a prayer, every prayer is for the earth. When we pray with the dirt, and to the earth we shall return. I believe we are pure. We started out that way, we don't need a cure. Deep inside, this I'm sure. I believe we are pure. I believe we are blessed. Everyone put your fears to rest. I have learned to expect the best. There's power in the words we speak. When you ask, you shall receive. There's power in the joys you seek, when your heart is on your sleeve. I ask for forgiveness, for strength and for hope. I ask for compassion, love, and in growth. Every moment's a prayer, every prayer is for the earth. When we pray with the dirt, and to the earth we shall return. I believe we are safe. I know. I believe we are good. I know one day we will all be understood. We got this far because we knew we would. I believe we are good. I
I believe we are safe. I believe we are filled.